Lunch with Pippa Hudson
on Cape Talk.
Join the conversation.
Really excited to share today's book club with you because earlier this week I had the privilege of sitting down over Zoom with actress and producer Gabrielle Union to chat about her latest book, which is called Got Anything Stronger? It's a follow-on to her previous hit book, We're Going to Need More Wine. It came out about 4 years ago. And in that one, she wrote very frankly about surviving sexual violence, about her struggles with fertility, her relationship with her husband, the basketball star Dwayne Wade. And, you know, you reflect on this career. Gabrielle's come an awfully long way since she first came to our attention in TV sitcoms and then in her breakthrough role as the cheerleader Isis in the 2000 teen hit Bring It On. She's not only become an influential producer who focuses on telling the stories of marginalized communities, she's become a breast cancer activist, a vocal spokesperson for women who've survived sexual violence, an advocate for inclusion in the entertainment industry. And last year, she was actually included on Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential people in the world. She's now 48 years old. In the new book, she shares more stories about her journey to parenthood, about the challenges her marriage has overcome, and about her experiences in Hollywood. We're going to play you an extract today. The whole interview is about double the length of what we can accommodate on air. So if you are interested in hearing more of her views and stories, we'll also share the full-length version online after the show today. For now, though, let's take a listen to a snippet.
Gabrielle, we all know the power of sharing a story, but when someone as famous as you goes as deep as you do to share your experiences, warts and all, the impact is massive. And we saw that with your first book a couple of years ago. You write at the start of this book about how total strangers wrote to you after that first book was published, sharing their own stories, talking about feeling empowered to share their own stories of sexual violence, of multiple miscarriage, of infertility struggles, because you had gone there in the book and said, basically, it's okay to talk about this. Had you expected that kind of reaction?
I didn't know what the reaction was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be just pure scorn. You know, I think in the darkest recesses of our minds, we assume that, you know, when you share a truth, it's going to somehow be used against you or to be somehow used to harm you. You're hopeful, but you just have no idea. And so when the first one was released and then we went out on that book tour and it was a revival, it felt like church in a lot of ways. It felt like church. It felt like large scale therapy on those tour stops. And it was just like we needed each other. We needed to see each other. We needed to listen to each other. We just needed to know each other existed. Other people out there that had experienced similar stuff. Through the process of writing both of these books, you just realize how alone we all feel. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're someone the world thinks has it all together or, you know, someone who generally hasn't had their voice heard and is rarely seen, that we're all kind of in similar boats. And you're just sometimes just waiting for someone to help you help yourself. And so with this book, you know, kind of knowing how the first one was received, since, you know, in the 4 years since that, since We're Gonna Need More Wine, I got more therapy and, you know, got my, you know, our miracle child and everything just changed. But the biggest thing was, I mean, just really leaning heavily into community and into therapy, to get more healing and to get more perspective and to be able to include some heavier chapters. And to just really feel comfortable being so candid. And I truly just embraced radical transparency and realizing that my truth isn't going to change because of someone else's reaction. My truth is my truth is my truth. And how someone else receives it has nothing to do with me. That is not my responsibility. It's my responsibility to tell the truth and hope to provide community and resources and life jackets. But being too invested in the reaction doesn't help anybody.
Look, let me jump straight to one of the most powerful pieces in this book, which is the section of writing where you write about the arrival of the miracle child. And to read what you wrote about the process of becoming a mom via a surrogate, what you were going through emotionally, it is messy, messy stuff. It is powerful to see somebody like you who, as you said, the world looks at and thinks, well, she's got everything together. She seems so totally at ease in her own skin. She owns her own story. to see someone like that admit that this wasn't easy, that I felt like a loser, that I felt like my body was failing me, that I felt like I was failing my husband, that there wasn't an instant fairy tale bond. It's raw stuff. And I'm interested to know how you feel about having got it out on paper and now birthed it into the world as a kind of second miracle child. Has it been a cathartic process for you to share that with the world?
Absolutely. Because you feel like you're holding pieces of yourself back. And in my line of work, repression, you know what I mean? Or that holding back, that process of holding back, it infects every part of your life. It impacts your mental health. It impacts your spiritual health, and it impacts the work that I do in the community and on screen. If I don't have that honesty, you know what I mean? And whether it's an honesty that I share with the world or just share with myself, I wasn't even sharing that with myself. I wasn't right with me. So the process of writing it and releasing it felt like relief and a burden I don't have to bear anymore. I put it down. I put it back. I gave it back to its rightful owners. And the parts that I had to really look at myself, I took ownership of that part too. I just had to lay it down and put it in its proper perspective, which is a lot of shit that I didn't ask for, you know, got dropped on my head, and I carried it around like it was like I had earned it or I had done it. And the release of that, I just felt was so important, not just for my life, but to remind other people who might find themselves holding things that are not theirs. Yeah. Or internalizing things that have, you know, that have nothing to do with who they are, their character, or what have you, to go ahead and release that and put those things down.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you might have carried that wasn't your burden to carry, but I know you felt, was the public scrutiny. When you shared the fact that your baby was on the way via a surrogate, the inevitable happened, that the trolls on social media jump on with the comments that she's too posh to have a baby for herself. She's paying somebody else to do the hard work, not knowing the truth behind that story, that you have gone through years of agonizing struggle to become a mother. I mean, how obscenely hurtful that must have been to you when, as it is, you're struggling through such a difficult emotional time and all the turmoil that you're facing as you come to terms with this decision, to have the whole world out there judging and saying that kind of thing on social media. As much as you can say that's other people's stuff, how they respond is their problem. It had to have hurt.
What hurt more was that I was saying those things to myself.
Wow.
You know, I have to go look for those comments, right? I don't have to look far to hear my inner voice saying the same thing to me. You know, sometimes when you see people talking smack about you, or, you know, the trolls or the haters or what have you, what really hurts is that it's the things that you feel about yourself, and you feel exposed. You feel like, oh my gosh, it's so obvious. Everyone agrees. It's more that they agree. Because with you, about how you feel about you, that is dark. And it adds to the pain, and it makes it a lot harder to dig your way out of.
Yeah.
But the thickest layer to break through of that chorus of negative voices is your own.
I want to share with you something one of my listeners shared with us a couple of weeks ago on the show. We were having a conversation about mental health support through fertility struggles. And a listener called in to say, the one thing I've really struggled with, having gone through huge struggles to fall pregnant, when the miracle baby finally arrived, she felt so much extra pressure on her. Like, she wasn't allowed to feel overwhelmed or to feel fraught or to not have it all together, because she had the miracle baby, and after all she'd been through fighting for it, all that she felt she was allowed to feel was gratitude that the baby was there. And she had this kind of sense that it would be completely unacceptable to admit what every single new mother feels. I'm a hot mess. I'm struggling. I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like a total failure at motherhood some days. It's something all of us go through. I wonder if you relate to that comment, that there is a sort of an added layer of a sense of trying to live up to perfection because of the struggle you've gone through to get there. Is it something that you felt?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you go through all of these things, right? What you put your body through, what you put your family through, if you're in a committed relationship, what you put the relationship through financially, all the money that you spend to give yourself a fighting chance. Anything less than complete and utter gratitude and joy and yeah, you're a bad person. You're a bad mother. You were not ever worthy of such a gift. There is no worse person than you is what it feels like. And the looks and the judgment and the just what people flat out say to your face if you dare to utter any bit of your truth. And it just lets you know, and everybody else too. And that's the hard part that a lot of people don't realize is not only are you making it very hard for the person who gets up the courage to tell you the truth about their motherhood journey, is you're sending a very loud and clear message to everyone else that's listening who may have similar struggles. And now after watching you be super critical of someone who's being honest about their challenges, that sends a real clear message to you too.
Yeah.
Be quiet and suffer in silence and don't ask for help. Don't be honest about, anything that isn't moonlight and roses as it pertains to, your child, your marriage. But it that same sentiment carries over, in relationships, in career, in any kind of dream that may seem like this impossible dream that finally came true, anything short of pure joy and adulation and gratitude, you weren't deserving of it to begin with, is what they make you feel like.
So I want to jump ahead here because you've touched on the fact that this is this sense of needing to be quiet, to simply be grateful. It plays into a lot of your later essays around racism and what you faced in the movie industry, because there is also a sense when you look back on some of your earlier work. I love the letter that you wrote to your character Isis from Bring It On, where you do have the sense, and I read into it, a sense of regret for what you allowed that character to be shaped into and how you feel looking back on her now. Because there's also a sense of be quiet, be manageable, be not too threatening here. Yes, I'm going to help you rewrite some of the dialogue on this part because it is so just ridiculously inappropriate as it's currently written, but I'm only going to push it so far. You clearly had an awareness. You were a young actress. You were still making your big breakthrough, that there was only so far you could push it without making the people around you uncomfortable. And you'd fought so hard just to get into the room that you didn't want to push that boundary too far. Talk to us a little bit about how you feel now, looking back on that with the wisdom of a couple of other decades. What would you do differently if you were charged with taking on that role today?
I would give her full humanity. I would allow her the ability to be angry and to be frustrated and to be annoyed and to have rage about her work being stolen for so long and another school reaping all of the benefits that come with winning, off of the backs of the Clovers. I would have allowed her that. I would have allowed her to be the kind of leader that can call a thing a thing and say, no, you what you guys did really had a wildly negative impact, not just on this squad, but on the whole school. You robbed us not only of championships, but you robbed us of all of the other things, the windfall that comes to the winners. Our school that desperately needed it was overlooked. No one even knew that we existed. But to not be able to give full voice to that, or not feel like I should give full voice to that, so I could make her a more palatable young Black girl leader, because good Black girls, you take the high road, you make it, you make sure that you're classy. And I'm using my finger quotes here, classy. But the thing about, when you really think about the, who gets labeled classy under duress and in the midst of adversity, is people, those are people that basically allow the oppressors and the abusers to get off without feeling the full weight of the harm caused. And it, what it does is allow them to think it wasn't that bad. So if they keep doing it and someone else has an honest reaction, now those people are the bad guys. Those people are the bullies. Do you see how, you know, you can go from victim to aggressor or victim to villain very quickly? And I wanted to avoid that. But in doing that, I robbed her of her humanity. The more I feel like I am freeing myself from the fear of being a quote unquote difficult rabble rouser, you know, some say rabble rouser, you know, whatever. Some say leader. I guess it depends on what side of the fence you're sitting on. I wanted to be able to give her that and not have, you know, anyone feel negatively about it. Cut to, you know, last year it was the 20th anniversary of Bring It On, and there were all of these panels and you know, the original cast was, you know, doing all of these panels and whatnot. And a journalist pointed out that there was this meme floating around about the top villains, right? Movie villains. And that ISIS was one of these memes.
Oh, come on.
I made her the nicest, most gracious leader in the face of just pure, you know, BS, thievery of work product, which, you know, a lot of us understand, you know, who work for a living and someone else takes your work and, you know, goes off and gets awards or gets promoted. And you're like, what the hell? We all understand that. She was the villain. And I was like, I did all that. And for what? It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how you shape shift to comport yourself for, you know, the white gaze or white validation or white comfort, you are still going to be seen as this scary, angry Black person that is angry for no reason, even when the whole movie is about being stolen from. You know what I mean? That was deep. That's what prompted me to write this chapter.
Yeah. So follow on from that, is that realization that it doesn't matter how carefully you sculpt it and mold the character to fit what you think the expectation is or what is going to be the most palatable version, it's still going to happen anyway. In a way, is that realization a bit liberating? Because it kind of feels to me like it gives you a free ride to go, I'm just never doing that again because there's no point doing it anyway. So I'm just going to do it the way I think it should be done going forward and never mind the other gaze.
Absolutely. I mean, in my own real life and in, you know, the more I embrace that in my real life, there's no way in hell, especially given full control of a character and full control over, you know, the words and actions that I put into somebody else's body, a character's body, if you will. And I still chose. Oh, hell no, no, no. I'm not doing it in real life and I'm not doing it in Hollywood. It doesn't serve anyone. This constant shape-shifting to be all things to all people at all times and you are nothing to yourself. And you do that enough, you lose complete sight of who the hell you are and what you stand for.
That was actress and producer Gabrielle Union talking to me from California via Zoom a little bit earlier this week. If you'd like to listen to more of her musings on motherhood and particularly, but we didn't get to play out today, a very interesting conversation about her experience of perimenopausal depression. That is something we're going to explore further, we hope, in our health segment next week. But if you'd like to listen to her thoughts on that, there is more to the interview, about another 15 or 20 minutes. So we are sharing the entire long version on our social media platforms after the show today. And if you'd like to read the book for yourself, you will find it in all major bookstores now. It's called You Got Anything Stronger? It's available in hardcover, priced between 320 to 460 Rand, depending on where you're shopping. Heads up though, Loot has it on special today. It was going for just over 200 Rand when I checked it out this morning.